All right, we'll say good morning. Let's begin the beautiful daf ahead of us today. Today's daf is Ayin 70. We are picking up actually last line of Samech Tes Amud Beis. Remember again, Abosa, yesterday we got into the very interesting discussion regarding trees. Specifically, again, when one sells a field, what trees or which trees are automatically included, which trees are not included. So again, remember, based on our Mishnah, we've already seen that there are certain what we'll call objectively chashuv trees that by definition are not included in real estate transactions. Specifically, again, the grafted carob tree, which the Gemara just calls the charuv, and the pruned sycamore tree, the shikma. So those trees, again, have an independent chashev identity, and therefore, again, are not included in the normative sale of real estate, unless specifically outlined in the transactions. Says the Gemara, Amarav, post a last line, Samech Tes, Amud Beis. Amarav, Kol She'olim Lo Bechav Al Havishir. Rav says, any tree that you would need a rope to climb, ultimately, again, is not included in the sale of a field. Which Rabbi says, look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Amarav kol sha'olim, he says, So the Rashbam understands that Rav is continuing the previous discussion. For example, I say to Reuven, I'm selling you my field, lebar me'iloni, with the exception of my trees. I'm not including the trees. So the question we were discussing yesterday is to know what trees are included in that shiur. Which trees am I withholding for myself? So Rav explains that by definition, it's large trees that I'm withholding. What's the definition of a large tree? A large tree is any tree that a person would need a rope to scale in order to climb. So therefore, again, if you look at the next verse, on kol she'olim lo bechavel, lelake perosev, chashev ilon, ubedeko ma'akidim afarish lakamish, shakavo harbe perosev brosh. So Rav says, any trees, now again, Rashbam is kind of giving us coming attractions, that this is talking about date palms. So Rav says, any date palm that is so tall that you would need a rope in order to climb it, in order to collect the dates on the top, so that type of tree is withheld. If a person were to say, I'm selling you my property except for my trees would mean any tree that is so tall that you need a rope to climb it. However, the Gemara says, kol she'olim lo bechav habishir, kol she'ein olim lo bechav lo habishir, any tree that is small enough that you do not need a rope to climb it in order to collect its fruit, ultimately would be included in the sale of the field. Top of Ayin, v'dayoni gola, and I will say the judges of the diaspora. So Rashbam points out, this refers specifically to Shmuel and Karno, these two sages. Dayani Gola Amri Kol Shaha Ol Kovsho Lo Havishir Kol Sheinha Ol Kovsho Havishir. So we'll say, interestingly enough, the Dayani, what we call the Dayani Gola, Shmuel and Karno, have a very interesting, I guess what they'll call metric. They say any type of tree that when the cow is pulling its plow, so the cow is able to pull its plow over the tree, and the tree bends, so that type of tree is automatically included in the sale of the land. Any type of tree that the cow is going to have to go around with its plow, so that tree is withheld. So we'll say essentially what they're saying is the following. Any tree that pretty much you could just run over with the plow is not chashiv, and therefore is included in the sale of the field. Any tree that is strong enough, that again, it can't be run over by the plow, but you have to go around it, that would be assured, that would be something that the owner would be withholding for himself. I will say, I want to be clear. Remember, this is talking about in this case, as the Rashbam pointed this out, this is talking about a case where the owner of the field, I'm the seller, and I'm saying, Reuven, I'm selling you my field, lebar me'ilani, except for the trees. That's the specific case. Remember again, under normal circumstances, when you sell a field, it includes what? The trees. Again, the only exception we saw in the Mishnah was the charuv and the shikma. But under normal circumstances, your palm trees are included. This is a specific case where I'm saying, I'm selling you my land, but not my trees. Then we have to try to understand, what does not my trees include? What am I withholding for myself? So here we have the machlokas. Rav says, any tree that is so tall that you need a rope to climb it, that's what I'm withholding. Anything smaller than that is included. Dayane gola, any tree that's so small that it can be run over by the plow, just kind of like spring back, that's included in the ground sale. But if it's so big that the plow would have to go around it, it's not included in the ground sale. Velopligi, the Gemara says, in reality, Rav and the Dayane gola are not arguing. Why? Habidikli, habi'ilani. They're actually referring, I will say, to two different types of trees. Rav is specifically referring to date palms, which grow tall, and the Dayane Gola are referring to other trees which do not grow as tall. So they're not arguing, rather again, they're just simply giving the halachos for two different types of trees. Good, says the Gemara. Voim ne Rav Acha bar Huna me Rav Sheshas. So Rav Acha bar Huna asked the following kasha of Rav Sheshas. Chutz mi charev ploni, chutz mi sedan ploni, mahu. So both say, listen to this. I'm selling a field to Reuven. I say, Reuven, I'm selling you the field except for this particular charev, except for this. Now again, I'm both saying in this context, this charev ultimately means a grafted carob tree. That's if you look at the Rashbam. The Rashbam says, chutz me charev hamurkav ploni, chutz mistan hashikma ploni, meaning the Rashbam, v'hayu ba harbe charuvin usidanin. Mahu, supposed to listen to this. So in this case over here, I'm saying to Reuven, I'm selling you my field except for this grafted carob or except for this pruned sycamore. Now, listen, now understand something. Now, what would happen if I would have said nothing? If I would have said nothing? Right? It's not included. Right? Remember, again, there, what we've established already is there are certain trees that have an independent chashav identity. And therefore, by definition, unless explicitly included in the sale, they are excluded from the sale. So under normal circumstances, if you have a grafted carob, which is considered to be a chashav tree, you have a pruned sycamore, that is a chashav tree, those trees are not included in the sale of land. I don't have to say they're not included. By definition, they're not included. In fact, again, the only way to get them included in the sale is how? To explicitly articulate that. So now, in this case, I will say, I'm making an interesting statement. I'm saying, Reuven, I'm selling you my field except for this grafted carob, or except for this pruned sycamore. So I'll say, so let's say again, there's more than one grafted carob, there's more than one pruned sycamore, so the obvious shayla is mahu, right? So how do I understand this statement? Oso charufu dulo kani, hashar charuvim kani. So do we say that since I'm explicitly articulating that I don't want the sale to include this carob or this sycamore, then what? It includes all of the others. Or the Gemara says, "Oh Dilma, shar charuvim nami lo kani." Or maybe essentially we just go ahead and we look at this statement as a nonsensical statement. In other words, that it's just I'm just speaking redundancies. But labdafka, none of the carobs, none of the sycamores are included in the sale. To which the Gemara says, "Well, say, remember again." So this is Rav Achar bar Rav Huna is asking from Rav Sheshas. To which Rav Sheshas responds, "Amar lei lo kana." Rav Sheshas says, "No, none of the carobs, none of the sycamores are included in the sale. We just look at my statement as a redundancy, just an unnecessary statement." Ace face, where is the cash? Is that true? Chutz mi charav ploni, chutz mi stan ploni, lo kana. But you have a brisa that says that if I sell my field to Reuven, and I say, Reuven, I'm selling you the field with the exception of this particular grafted carob tree, or this pruned sycamore tree, lo kana. So Reuven has not acquired. My lav oso charuv ud lo kana, hashar charuv in kana. Does the brisa not mean to say that Reuven doesn't acquire this particular carob or this particular sycamore, but he inquires all of the others? To which the Gemara says, Amar lo, afilu shar charuvin nami lo kana. Rather, no, Reuven doesn't acquire any of the carob trees. How do we know this? Suppose I say the Gemara, so Rav Sheshas actually brings an interesting raya. He says, Teidav, di'ilu amar le sadai mechura lecha, chutz mi sadai plonis. Suppose to listen to this. Let's say I'm selling a field to Reuven, and I say, Reuven, I'm selling you my field, and with the exception of field B. So let's say I'm selling Reuven's field A. And I say to him, I'm selling you field A with the exception of field B. To which the Gemara says, Hahihu delokani, ha achranaisa kani. So do we say that because I'm excluding field B, then it must be that I'm selling in field A and field C? Rather, we'll say, obviously not. I'm selling in field A. The fact that I'm saying I'm selling you field A, but not field B, we look at that extra D board just simply as a nonsensical statement. It's almost like sometimes in halacha, there is a concept that we sometimes apply called palginon dibure. Palginon dibure, which is about to say, sometimes we take a statement that has relevant and irrelevant information, and what we do is we splice it. But I will say, you know, it's not just a principle in halacha, it's a wonderful principle in life as well. Right? Sometimes again in life, palginon dibure. Sometimes again, someone says something, you have to know what to take, and you have to know what to discard. So we'll say, so that's the Gemara saying over here. The idea over here is if I say to Reuven, I'm selling you field A, but I'm not selling you field B. So we can interpret that statement to mean what? I'm selling you field A, but not field B. Oh, since he excluded field B, it must mean that what? That he's including field C. To which the Gemara says, no, obviously, I'm just selling Reuven field A. What about that statement with the exception of field B? Whatever. It was just sometimes people just say irrelevant stuff. So therefore, we just go ahead and simply splice that deep or discard the irrelevant part and focus on the relevant part, to which the Gemara says, would we say that because he's excluding B, it must be that he's coming to include C in addition to A? Obviously not. Ella lo kana, hacha nami lo kana. So therefore, I both say, Rav Sheshes Paskins, that even in this case, when I say to Reuven, I'm selling you my field, chutz micharuv ploni, with exception of this particular carob. See, I will say, even though the carob of the sycamore was already excluded, and I might be tempted to say that what I'm really saying to Reuven is, this is the only one that I'm withholding, but I'm conveying to you in the sale all of the other ones. Kamashmolam, we just look at this as an irrelevant statement, which I will say essentially tells you that what? That if, under any circumstances, if you want to include a grafted carob or pruned sycamore in your sale of real property, the only time that happens is when? If you explicitly state in a positive fashion that you are including these items in the sale. Anything short of an explicit statement of inclusion, by definition, does not include those items in the sale of the ground, in the sale of the land. So it says the Gemara, Ikedamri, supposedly there's another version of this. Vikedamri, Bo'emine, Ravacha Barahuna, Me Rav Sheshes. Supposedly in this alternate version, Ravacha Barahuna asked Rav Sheshes, Chutz Mechatzi Charuv Ploni. Chutz Mechatzi Stan Ploni Mahu. Supposedly listen to this. It's an interesting case. So I say to Reuven, I'm selling you my field, with the exception of a half a carob, or the exception of a carob tree, or the exception of a half a sycamore. So the Gemara says, Mahu. How do I understand that statement? Mahu, Sharcha Reuven, Vadai Lokani, Ha Mashashir Bosacharov Kani. So we'll say, so how do I look at this? So do I say, it's clear that what? That I have certainly, I'm sorry, Sharcha Reuven, Vadai Lokani. It's clear that I have not conveyed ownership of the rest of the carobs in the field. So do we say that ultimately, again, what about the half of the carob? Do I convey ownership to that or not? Or do I say that what? Even what I have retained ultimately, again, in that half a carob, also cannot be acquired. Amarlei lo kani. To which Rav Sheshes responds, at the end of the day, Reuven has acquired nothing in any of the carob trees. I esvei b'yetigmari zekasha chutz mechatzi haruv ploni chutz mistan ploni sharcha Reuven lo kana. Yet the Braisa says Rabosai that if I say to Reuven, I'm selling you my entire field with the exception of half of a carob or half of a sycamore. So sharcha Reuven lo kana. Reuven has not acquired the rest of the carob trees or the rest of the sycamore trees. My love, sharcha Reuven hu delo kana. Hamashishir ba'osa charuv kana. Is it only the other carobs that he has not acquired? But Rabbi say that which I have retained ultimately, but the, meaning the other half in this carob that I have not retained for myself, he is kona. Amalei, which Rav Sheshes says lo. Afilu mashishir ba'osa charuv nami lo kana. But say even that piece of the carob, the half, the other half that I have not retained for myself, Reuven does also not acquire. How do we know this? Teda. The Gemara calls the same raya. De ilu amarle sadai mechuru lacha chutz michatzis sade ploni. Because we'll say, if I were to say to Reuven, my field is acquired to you, right? I'm hereby conveying my field to you. Chutz michatzis sade ploni. In other words, we'll say the case is like this. Reuven, I'm conveying to you ownership of field A with the exception of half of field B. So Rabbi say, how do we look at that statement? Ahu dilo kana ha'idach kana. So Rabbi say, do we say that since I'm withholding half of B, it must mean that what? That I'm conveying to him the rest of C. Rather, Gemara says, of course not. Ella lo kani hachanami lo kani. Rather, Rabbi say, we just look at that statement regarding field B as a nonsensical statement. We simply palgidon diburi, we splice it off, and we only focus on the positive statement. So to over here. So Rabbi say, bottom line. Halacha l'maisa, what comes out is the following. We've established already that when you sell real property, so we'll say, so grafted carob trees, pruned sycamore trees, are not included in the sale. And the only way to have them included in the sale is how? To explicitly include them. Anything less than an explicit inclusion in the sale, whatever references you may make, are not enough to convey ownership of those chashava trees until you explicitly say, I'm selling you the ground, and I'm selling you the trees. Ultimately, again, the charuv and the shikma are excluded from the sale. That's the bottom line, halacha l'maisa. We'll say another interesting case. Rav Amram has the following kasha of Rav Chisda. Hamafkid, Mafkir Eitzel Chavera Bishtar. Supposed to listen to this case. Take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. The Rashbam says Bishtar, it's about 3-6, about 9 lines up from the bottom. Bishtar, Shekasav Kama Hifkidlo, V'chasmo Ve'edim, V'ahani Le'haishtara, D'lomatzi Ta'in Nifkad Lohayu Dvarim Yom. Supposed to listen to this. I deposit money with Reuven. Or it doesn't have to be money, it could be anything. I deposit an object with Reuven. And what happens? So we'll say, I go ahead and I draft up a shtar. I draft up a shtar that says, I deposited whatever it might be with Reuven. Right? $1,000 with Reuven. Why am I drafting a shtar, Bosai? Because I don't want to run into a situation where Reuven says this never happened. Okay, so what happens? Barmelo, so we'll say, now it comes time for me to collect the object that I deposited. I want to be clear, this is not a loan. This is, I've deposited something with Reuven to watch. I come back to Reuven, and he says, what does Reuven say? I gave it back to you. What do you tell me? I gave it back to you. So we'll say, Samahu, what's the halacha under those circumstances? Now, Migo, do we say the following? Migo di boy amar ne'ensu mehemen. Hashd nami mehemen. So we'll say, do we say that Reuven has a Migo? What's the Migo, Bosai? You know, if you deposit something with someone to watch, and what happens? There's an ones circumstance. There's some type of extenuating circumstance beyond their control, and the object is lost. So we'll say, what's talocha? Talocha is that the shomer, right? The person who's watching the pikadon is potter. So do we say Reuven has a Migo? Right? What's his Migo, Bosai? He could have said, listen, you're not going to believe it. A tsunami, you know, ripped through my house, totally destroyed the object, or swept it up, and it's gone. Since he could have said that there was an extenuating circumstance, and he would have been potter, so the Gemara says, Migo di boy amar ne'ensu mehemen, hashnami mehemen. Therefore, what? Rabbi say, he has a Migo that he could have claimed ones. So therefore, what? When he claims that I returned the object to you, he should be believed as well. O Dilma, so we'll say that's one possibility. O Dilma, the other possibility is Amarle Shtarcha Biyadi my boy. But we'll say, on the other hand, I could claim Reuven. If indeed you returned the object, then what? Why do I still have the shtar? So we'll say, you have to understand the way this situation works is the following. I have the object. I'm the owner of the object. I deposit, let's keep this easy, my bar of gold. My bar of gold. Halavai v'shal bizocha. Right? I have my bar of gold. I'm depositing it with Reuven for Reuven to watch it. What happens? I draw up a shtar. Shtar says, I, Shmuel Silber, deposited a bar of gold with Reuven. I come back to Reuven. So Reuven gave back my bar of gold. What did I give back to you last week? So as I said, now the child is, do we believe Reuven? So on one hand, we could say he has an ego. What's the ego? The ego is that he could have said, it was an earthquake, right? And the ground opened up, swallowed up your bar of gold and closed back up. I'm so sorry. And I will say he would be believed with a tiny of ones. So that's one possibility. And therefore, again, when he claims that he returned it, he should be believed as well. On the other hand, I will say there's a problem with this claim, which is the way this works is the following. I am the one who holds the shtar. I, the owner of the object, hold the shtar regarding the pikadon. I will say the way this would work under normal circumstances is how I deposit the bar of gold with Reuven to watch it. We have a shtar drawn up. At the moment when I would retrieve the gold, what would happen? we would either I'd give the shtar to Reuven, or the shtar would just be destroyed. In other words, that it's not in Reuven's best interest that I retain this shtar. Why? Because it could open the door to double dipping. It could open the door ultimately for me trying to claim again that he still has my object. So if I come back to Reuven and Reuven says, I give it back to you next week, I say, Reuven, that doesn't make any sense. You know why? I still have the shtar. If indeed you gave it back to me last week, then what? Either you should have the shtar, or the shtar should have been destroyed. To which the Gemara says, So what's the halacha? Shtar chabiyadi my bai. Amarle, so we'll say, remember again, Rav Amram is asking this kashar and Rav Chista. So Rav Chista says, Amarle, mehemen. Rav Chista says, we believe Reuven, we believe the Shomer. The Shomer says that he returned it, so we believe him. But 1 second, Rav Chista, what do you do with the fact that I could say to Reuven, Reuven, how can you say that you return the object to me? I still have the shtar. If you really return the object to me, either again, you should have the shtar, or better yet, the shtar should have been destroyed. To which the Gemara says, Amar lei, ulatameich, dechi amar lei nansu, mi matzi amar lei shtarcha biyadi my boy. So we'll say, so 1 second. So Rav Chista gives an interesting answer. Rav Chista says, clearly the presence of the shtar can't always compel Reuven to pay. After all, again, if Reuven would have claimed ones, if Reuven would have claimed extenuating circumstance, so could I say to Reuven, I know you're claiming extenuating circumstance, but I still have the shtar. So you see from here, just having the shtar doesn't automatically always entitle you to get back payment. To which the Gemara says, Amalei, some of the days I will say, so. To which again they respond back to Rav Chista, Sof, ki amar le nansu lav shvua boy. To which they say to Rav Chista, that's fine, but at the end of the day, if Reuven were to claim ones, so we'll say, remember again, I deposited the gold with Reuven, I come back to collect it, Reuven says, I'm so sorry, earthquake, ground opened up, swallowed up your bar of gold, and closed back up, I'm so sorry, the gold is lost. So we'll say, you understand that just because Reuven makes that statement, we don't say, okay, you know, fine, we believe you. Rather, we'll say, what's the halacha? He has to take a shvua. Right? Either way, of course he can produce edus, but we'll say, assuming that he can't produce edus, he has to take a shvua. In other words, we don't just take him at his word. There has to be a mechanism by which we verify or corroborate his version of the events. In the absence of edus, he's going to have to take a shvua. So we'll say, so what the Gemara is responding back with, what Rav Sheshes, or excuse me, Rav Amam is responding back to Rav Chista is, Rav Chista understands even when he claims a tainus onus, that by itself does not automatically lend credence to his story. He needs a shvua. To which the Gemara says, Hachanami, to which Rav Chista says, you're right, my ne'aman. What does it mean when I say that he's believed? And as well, so remember again, here's what we've got. Rav Chista's claiming that in the case where I go ahead and I give Reuven the bar of gold to watch, and I come back the next week, and I say, Reuven, can I have my gold back? And Reuven says, what are you talking about? I returned it back to you already. So Rav Chista said that Reuven is ne'aman. Reuven is believed to go ahead and say that I returned it to you last week. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Or Rav Amram says, Rav Chista, I don't understand how you could say that he's ne'aman. How? What about the claim that I have? That shtar chabiyadi my boy. I have the shtar. If you really returned ultimately again the gold to me last week, then what? Then either again you should have the shtar, or ultimately again the shtar should have been destroyed. Rav Chista says, you're right. What does it mean, my ne'aman? Ne'aman b'shivua. We'll say at the end of the day, Rav Chista says, you're right. When I say that Reuven is believed, Reuven is believed to do what? Reuven is believed to support his claim with his shvua. So if I show up, I say, Reuven, give me back my gold. And Reuven says, I gave it back to you last week. So Rav Chista says, Ne'eman, we believe Reuven. But again, we believe Reuven with what Rabbi say? With the shvua. And the chiddush of Rav Chista is that even though, see, Rabbi say, the havamina is that if I'm holding on to the shtar, then what?
That should be it.
Meaning, again, that at the end of the day, who says Reuven should even be allowed to take a shvua? In other words, case closed, I have the shtar. Tirshav Rav Chista says, look, stuff happens. So there could be some other reason why, even if Reuven returned the object, I still have the shtar. Therefore, again, what we allow Reuven to do is what? What we allow Reuven to do is take a shvua and ultimately swear to the fact that he returned the object to me. And indeed, if he does that, ultimately, Rav Chista says, he is believed. to which the Gemara says, Lema ba plukta dahani tanoi. So let's say that Rav Osai, this machlokes, which is the machlokes between Rav Amram and Rav Chista, because you see Rav Osai, Rav Amram seems to feel that if I, the owner of the bar of gold, has the shtar, then case is done. Case is done. No, again, if Reuven is claiming onus, Rav Osai, that's a different situation. Everybody agrees that if I show up to Reuven, I say, Reuven, give me back my bar of gold. And Reuven says, onus, earthquake, ground open up, swallow up the bar of gold. Everyone will agree that what happens in those circumstances? Shavua. Right, so we believe him, meaning he's believed to make a tainus onis, but he needs to support that taino with a shavua. That everyone agrees. The shayla is what happens if he says, I returned it to you. So sorry, if Amram says, if I hold the shtar, then Reuven is not believed to say, I returned it to you. Because again, if you would have returned it to me, then I shouldn't have the shtar in my hand. If I have the shtar in my hand, the halacha is on my side, you owe me the bar of gold or its value. Rav Chista says, no, we believe Reuven. Again, we believe Reuven, assuming that he's willing to take a shvua to back up his claim. To which the Gemara says, Lema ba pluki dahani tonoi, say that Rav Chista and Rav Amram, they're machlokes, it's the fine machlokes tonight. Rav Chista, listen to this. Tisanyo, because we learned, Shtarkis Hayotzi Al Yisomet. So let's analyze this. Shtarkis is another name for what we called an Iska. Let's say this is taking us back to our Bava Metzia days. Take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Shtarkis Hayotzi Al Yisomet. Listen to this. Rashbam describes the case. Reuven Shanasan Moos L'Shimin L'Machtzis Schar. Reuven gave money to Shimon. Ultimately, it was L'Machtzis. Remember, again, we spoke about this in the Halachos of Ribbis. That one of the ways in which you can structure a transaction is the following. So Reuven is the money man, right? So Reuven has money. He wants to give the money to Shimon. Ultimately, again, Shimon is going to invest the money. So we'll say the way they're structuring this transaction is the following. Half of the money, so let's say Reuven is giving Shimon $100,000. So the way this is going to work is the following. $50,000 of that is considered to be a loan to Reuven. $50,000, the other $50,000, I will say, is considered to be a pikadon. A pikadon. I will say, so what's happening over here? Now remember, all of this money is getting invested into one business transaction. But Lamaisa, the half that is a halva, so essentially that becomes Shimon's half to do with it as he pleases. If he makes money off it, great. If he loses money off it, that's his problem. Meaning that half is his. The other represents the $100,000, ultimately again, that Reuven is giving to Shimon, that Shimon has to be able to return to Reuven. So this is a two-fold transaction. Half of the money is considered to be a halva to Reuven, half of the money is considered, excuse me, to Shimon, half of it is a picado. So watch this case. The kasavlo, I'm reading the Rashbam. The kasavlo shtar, the kasavlo shtar, kama hifkidlo. So we'll say, so again, say in the shtar outlines, that how much was lent and how much was given as a pikadam. Umeis Shimon. So we'll say what happens. Never Shimon dies. Fahotzi Reuven oso shtar al yisomim. Litvoa mehem pikdono. So we'll say, so what happens? So Shimon dies. Reuven wants to collect from the yisomim. So what happens? Meaning, so now Reuven wants to collect the part that it's pikadam. Now you'll see what's happening over here. So Reuven's coming forward. Reuven, who's the owner of the money, is coming to the Yisomim to collect the pikadon part of this transaction. V'ayisomim tonin, shema avinu hechzir lecha. So the Yisomim say to Reuven, listen, maybe our father paid you back. Inami, kainas baritano. Or maybe they're saying, not maybe, but maybe they're claiming, our father did pay you back. V'ilu haya milva ba'alma, shehilva Reuven l'shimon, umei Shimon, Kule alma modu dinish baruvein vegove kalashtam in ayesomim. Deles la avuon shum taino gabi milva. See, Rabbi say, on the loan part, there is no taino. There is no taino. Because Rabbi say, remember again, if you borrow money from someone, there's no taino you could advance that gets you out of paying back that money. Meaning, let's say again, some extenuating circumstance occurred. Is an extenuating circumstance enough to get you out of paying back your loans? It'd be nice, right? But Lamaisa, it doesn't work, right? No matter what your circumstances are, if you borrow money, you are chayiv to go ahead and pay it back. So we'll say there is no claim that could have exempted Shimon Zichrona Livracha, from paying back that debt. Therefore, by definition, there is no claim that could exempt the Yisomim from paying back that money as well. So we'll say, in this case over here, Reuven lent money to Shimon. Half of it was a pikadon, half of it was a halvah. Now we'll say, on the halvah piece, there is no claim that Shimon Zichrono Livracha could have advanced that would have exempted him from having to pay back that borrowed money. Therefore, by definition, but remember again, essentially Yisomim inherit the position of their deceased father. So because there is no claim that Shimon could have made that would have exempted him from the halva, therefore what? There's no claim the Yisomim could make that would exempt them from the halva as well. Therefore, when Reuven comes to collect from the Yisomim, we'll say, what does Reuven do? What does anyone do who wants to collect from Yisomim? They swear, make a shvua. So Reuven makes a shvua that he never got paid back, and he gets paid back the halva piece. Oh, here's the interesting part of Moshe. I see it in your eyes. Here's where it gets exciting. You know what's coming. So what happens? Here's the problem. Ela palga milva palga pikadon. The problem Moshe is on the other 50%. Remember, again, on a pikadon, there is a taina that Shimon Zichrono Livracha could have made. What's the taina, Rabbi Osei? What's the taina? Ones. Ones. Right? Remember again, if somebody deposits something with you, if extenuating circumstances occur to that object, that would exempt you, the Shomer, from having to return it. So we'll say what's happening over here is the following. Reuven, the money man, we'll call him, has no problem collecting the 50% that's a loan. Because the halacha is if you lend someone money, and let's say again the borrower dies, so you go to the estate of the borrower, you, the lender, take a shvuah that you never got repaid, and you get paid back your money from the estate. What about the pikadon? I'm finishing Rashbam. Upal the pikadon, kedin komos, and as soon as the mechzes schar, kedin mefresh azil, So we'll say, listen to this. So now back to the Gemara. So we'll say, this Shtar Kis is another name for this Iska transaction, which means monies that were advanced from Reuven to Shimon, half of those monies were categorized as a loan, half of the money was categorized as a pikadon. What happens? Shimon dies. His children inherit his estate. Reuven comes to the estate, and Reuven says, I want my money, please. $100,000. So Rabbi will say, what happens? Dayane Gola Amri. So the Dayane Gola, Rabbi will say, Dayane Gola Shmuel and Karna, they say, Nishba, Reuven takes the Shvua, Vigove Kulo. And Reuven collects everything. Now, both say, and remember again, what's everything? Everything means $100,000. He collects the pikadon money, and he collects ultimately again the halva money as well. The Dayani Eretz Yisrael Amri, no, the Dayani Eretz Yisrael, both say, they say, Nishba the Gove Mechza. The Dayani Eretz Yisrael, both say that Reuven could swear, but he only collects half. They both say, which half? The halva half, the loan half. Because they both say, the loan half, even if Shimon himself was alive, there is no taina that Shimon could advance that would have exempted him from paying back the money that he borrowed. Therefore, again, Reuven the lender comes along and collects the 50,000 that represents talba. Oh, but it's like this. People say when it comes to the section that's the pikadon, the 50,000 that is treated like a pikadon, there Rabbi say Reuven cannot collect from the estate. Why not? Because had Shimon Zichrono Livracha been alive, he could have advanced the taina that would have exempted him from paying back the pikadon. What would have been the taina? Right? The ones. And therefore Rabbi say the Gemara says that it's almost as if the Yisomim also have the right to advance that taina of onis. Again, Rabbah said, now they're obviously not really advancing it because they have no idea what has happened or wasn't happened, but they could say essentially, maybe there was an onis, right? Either maybe AR father paid it back, maybe AR father paid it back, and if he didn't pay it back, maybe there was an onis. And therefore, by definition, because there are circumstances that we don't know about that possibly existed, you don't have a right to go ahead and collect this.
What interest does Reuben have in loaning money that way?
Oh, because it avoids ribbis. Because again, remember, I will say this whole iska thing is essentially what allows people to quote unquote lend with interest without it being categorized ultimately again as an interest bearing loan. And we're not going to get fully back into that, but that's why somebody would lend like this. So says the Gemara, watch this. So v'dana eretz yisrael omrim nishba v'gove mechza. So we'll say, listen to this. So fundamental machlok in dayana eretz yisrael and dayana gola. Now remember, the assumption over here is both the Dayane Eretz Yisrael and the Dayane Gola subscribe to the view of the Nardoim. What do the Nardoim say? Dami Nardoi, Hai Iska, Palga Milva, Upalga Pikadom. So both say everybody agrees that the way an iska, the Gemara over here is calling it a shtar kiss, but everybody agrees that the way an iska transaction, I both say, is set up is how, is ultimately as a part pikadon, part halva. So my love, b'hai kamifli. So both say, so what are they arguing about? So both say again, what's the fundamental machlokas? The fundamental machlokas is the Dayane Gola. The Dayane Gola ultimately say that all Reuven needs to do is take a shavua and he collects the entire amount. Dayane Eretz Yisrael say all you can collect through your shavua is what? The amount of the hava, but not the amount of the pikadon. So what are they arguing about? My love, b'hai kamifli. The mar savar matzi amarle shtarcha biyadi my boy. So both say the Dayane Gola say that Reuven has the upper hand. And we'll say, why does Reuven have the upper hand? Because if it's true, Shimon Zecharon Livracha, if it's true that you paid me back, or I should say, that you gave me back the Pikadon, then what? Why do I have the Shtar? In other words, we'll say, what the Dayane Gola are saying is, he who has the Shtar has the upper hand. At the end of the day, Reuven is coming forward with a Shtar that says that he's owed $100,000. 50,000 of it is a Haval, 50,000 of it is a Pikadon. The Halva, obviously, again, the estate cannot deny. And even the Pikadon cannot be denied. Why? Because I will say, if it was true that Shimon Zecharon Levracha gave back the amount of the Pikadon, then what? Then why would Reuven have the Shtar in his hand? Therefore, the Dayana Gola say that Reuven, the owner of the money, has the ability to take a Shavua and collect the full amount. Umar Sabar, but on the other hand, the Dayane Eretz Yisrael say, Lo Amri, we do not say that, because we'll say at the end of the day, what they say is that Lemaisa, again, even though Reuven holds the Shtar, because Shimon could have had a taina of what? A taina of Ones, right? And then again, remember, even if Reuven holds the Shtar, the fact that Reuven holds the Shtar does not share Shimon's ability to taina Ones. And therefore, again, essentially you see that the existence of the Shtar in the hands of Reuven does not preclude Shimon, and by extension his Yarshim, by of advancing other tainus that would exempt them from having to repay back the Pikadon amount. Correct. So essentially, all what this does is it would shift the onus back to Reuven, and would essentially make it a situation of hamotzi mechaveru alav haraya, and the existence of the shtar is not enough, because since there is a scenario where even if you have the shtar, the holder or the borrower of the money, not the borrower but the called meshomer, would still not have to pay you back because he claimed onus. Therefore, your existence of the shtar is not enough for you to extract the money from the estate. You have to bring some other proof with you to go ahead and back up your claim. So we'll say, what it essentially does is it creates an impossible threshold for Reuven. Because I will say, what it would require of Reuven, essentially, and this sounds strange, it would require Reuven to have to prove that there was never an ones event. There was never an onus event, which is virtually an impossible thing to prove. So essentially, according to Dayane Gola, Rabbi will say in this kind of, Dayane Eretz Yisrael, in this situation, Reuven, even through a Shavua, is only going to get back 50,000, that's the loan amount, but essentially he'll really never be able to go ahead and reclaim the Pikadon amount. To which the Gemara says,
no.
No. Duchuli Alma is Ludrav Chista. Rabbi will say, everyone agrees with Shitas Rav Chista. Rabbi will say, remember again, Rav Chista is of the opinion who says that what? That Lameisa, when you go out and you deposit money with someone, and they say, or deposit an object with someone, and they say that what? They say they gave it back to you, they are Mehemen. So everyone agrees with Rav Chista. So says the Gemara, V'hacha v'hacha mefiyin. Rabbi will say, here is the machlokes. The Mar Savar, Im Isa de Pare, if it's true that Shimon had paid back, that Shimon had paid back Reuven, then what? Meimar Hava Amar. Mostly listen to this. So here's the machlokes. If Shimon, while he was still alive, had in fact paid back Reuven, then what? Then what Rabbi say? He would have told his children. We'll say, which by the way, is just an interesting yisod in general about, it could be what the Gemara is trying to advance is some type of concept whereby what? Some type of concept whereby a person, it's important for a person to inform his mishpacha about his dealings. Say, it's an interesting yisod. You know, death, you know, it's always fascinating that we don't learn hilchos avelos, right? Which, if you think about it, is an interesting idea, right? Unless a person is normally, like, learning for smicha, you're not usually learning hilchos avelos, which is such a strange thing. Why? Because, well, say, one thing is clear, which is, it is going to become halacha lemaisa for each of us at some point in time. I mean, everybody is going to experience Hilchos Avelos. Right? The only way you don't experience Hilchos Avelos is Chas V'Shalom if a person dies young. So we hope, it sounds like a strange thing, but we hope that in Emirat Hashem the time will come where each of us will have to go ahead and know Hilchos Avelos. We hope that it's in a normal course of losses. But yet we don't learn it. So it seems to be again like our Masora is, we're just not usik in these kind of things. We prefer not to be usik in it until we have to be usik in it. So kind of there's like a trickle-down mentality with a lot of things surrounding death. So, you know, I'll make a plug for Yaakov. You know, so that's why for the estate planning, a person really has to plan. A person has to plan. The Gemara is saying over here is, you have to plan, meaning, and your children and your mishpacha should know about your dealings. Because Rachmana Letzlan, we see this, unfortunately, is Maisim Bechol Yom, that when a mishpacha is just clueless about the affairs, especially of a head of household, and that person is no longer here, it plunges a mishpacha, besides dealing with the catastrophe of the loss, right? At the end of the day, it creates chaos for the mishpacha. So the Gemara says something amazing over here. Reuven took on this iska from Shimon. Excuse me. Shimon took on this iska of $100,000 from Reuven. That was a significant investment. Says the Gemara, if Reuven did pay back the pikadon amount, then there's no question that what? He would have told his mishpacha. Because the responsible thing to do is to let your mishpacha know where you're holding in terms of your business. The answer will say it's an incredible, incredible insight. Therefore, the Gemara says over here, Demar Savar, Im Isa, Depare, because one opinion holds that, will say that's what? That if indeed Reuven had given back the money to, excuse me, Shimon had given back the money to Reuven, then what? Meimar Hava Amar. He certainly would have told his Yarshim. And if Rabbi say, if the Yarshim don't know about it, then what? Then that's indicative that what Rabbi say, that Shimon did not repay that amount. Omar Savar, another opinion says no. Even if Shimon had every intention of sharing this with his family, Amar Malach Hamavis Luda'anse. Maybe the Malach Hamavis got to him before he was able to share. In other words, you could have Shimon who has an interest in sharing all of this information, but Rabbi say sometimes the Malach Hamavis does not give us the time to do all of the things we feel we need to do. So it's possible that he had intention to share, but Lamaisa again, Lamaisi just never had the opportunity to go ahead and actually share it. So the Gemara says, Dvaita. The Gemara says, Shalach Lei, Shalach Rav Huna Bar Avin, Hamakid Itzach Havir Rabishtar. So let's listen to this. So we are left with a fundamental machlokes between the Dayane Eretz Yisrael and the Dayane Gola. So the Dayane Gola hold that Lamaisa Ruvain, who is the owner of the money, could come and could collect the entire amount. He takes a shvua, he collects the entire amount. Now, I will say again, everybody agrees that Ruvain is always going to be able to get back 50%. Which 50%? The hava, the loan part, obviously is payable. What about the pikadon? Suppose the Dayane Gola apparently say that Reuben could go ahead and take a shvua, collect the entire amount. Why? Because had Shimon, Zichrono Livracha, paid back Reuven, he what? He would have definitely told his children about that. The fact that the children don't know it explicitly, that he paid it back, we take that to mean that's what? That Shimon did not pay back, and therefore again, Reuven takes a shvua, collects the entire amount. Then Eretz Yisrael say, no, we agree. He collects 50%, that is the halva amount. But in terms of the pikadon amount, Rabbi say, maybe he meant to tell his kids, but Nebuch, again, the Malach HaMavis got to him before. And therefore, Lamaisa, the most that Reuven could collect is the halva amount, but not the pikadon amount. Shalach Rav Huna Bar Abin. So Rabbi say, Rav Huna Bar Abin sent the following discussion. Hamafkir Eitzach HaVeiro Bishtar. If I deposit an object with my friend and I draw up a shtar that highlights this deposit, and what happens? I deposited it with Reuven, and what does Reuven say? Silver, I gave it back to you. Ne'eman. Suppose I say, what's the halacha? The halacha is that Reuven is Ne'eman. Now again, remember, we've qualified this. I mean, Reuven is Ne'eman how? Reuven is Ne'eman b'shvua. Ushtar kisayotze al yisomim. But Rabbi say, if you have ultimately again this iska agreement, this $100,000 that was lent from Reuven to Shimon. So what happens? Shimon dies. 50% is alva, 50% is epikadon. Nishpa vigove kulo. So Rabbi say, ultimately again, Reuven takes the shvur and collects the entire amount. Rabbi say, now the Gemara says tarti. Now these are two contradictory cases. Why are these two contradictory cases, Rabbi Osai? Because in the first case, where it says that I deposited an object with Reuven, and so what happens? Reuven says, I returned it to you, which means what? A shomer is believed to say that he returned the pikadon, even if the owner of the object sells the shtar in his hand. Rabbi Osai, if that's the case, then when Reuven lends money to Shimon, or when Reuven gives money to Shimon, in an iska arrangement, and Shimon dies, so then what? Reuven should only be able to collect what? 50%, which is the halva amount. Because in the pikadon amount, let the yarshim taina that what? Our father possibly returned to you the pikadon amount already while he was still alive, and therefore again you have no claim for the pikadon amount. So the two statements contradict each other. Shiny hasam, but say, listen to this, it's different. Why? Dim isa de pare, meimar hava amar. But say, we assume that again, that Shimon did not return the money because of the pikadon, because if Shimon returned the money, then what? He would have told his children. And the fact that the children don't explicitly, positively know that their father returned the money, therefore what? Therefore, the Maisa, we assume the money was not returned, and therefore Reuven has the ability to take a shvua and collect the entire amount from the Yarshim. Amar Rava, Rava says, Vosai Hilchusa, Nishba Vigova Mechza. Rava says, we pass in like Dayane Gola, and therefore Rabbi Osai, in this case, where Reuven lent Shimon $100,000, $50,000 was a Hava, $50,000 was a Pikadon, Shimon Nebuch dies, and now Reuven comes to the estate to collect the money. So Rava says, we pass in, Reuven can only collect $50,000, which represents the Hava, but he cannot collect the Pikadon. Why can't he collect the pikadon, Rabbi Osai? It seems to be because the children could kind of what? Our father paid you back. Or maybe our father paid you back. And because you can't prove otherwise, ultimately you can't collect that amount. Says the Gemara, Amar Marzucho, Hilchasa, Ki Dayane Gola. And Marzucho says, Da Alocha follows the Dayane Gola. Rabbi Osai, contradiction. Because what did the Dayane Gola say? Both of the Dayane Gola said that what? That Reuven has the ability to take a Shavua and what? And what? Collect the full amount. So which one is it? Rava, you just said the halacha is that Reuven comes along and can only collect half. The half that is the halva, not the pikadon. Rav Zucha, Mar Zucha comes along and says, the halacha follows Dayane Gola, but Dayane Gola says you collect the full amount. Which one is it? Amarli Ravina Mar Zucha, Ha Amar Rava, Nishpa Vigova Mechza. So Ravina says, Mar Zucha, I don't understand. Why are you saying that the halacha follows the Dayane Gola when Rava said that what? Rava said that Reuven, in our case, who is the owner of the money, could take a shvua and only collect half. The half which is the halva and not the pikadon. Amar Leit Hutra Azutra said, you're right. Anon, Dayane Gola, top of Ayin Alef, Rabbi Osai, Ipcha Masninala. Mar Azutra says, oh, I'm sorry. We record the shitos differently. Sibo say in the version we had in our Gemara, the Yarnei Gola were the ones who said that Reuven could take a shvua and collect the full amount. The Yarnei Eretz Yisrael were the ones who said that Reuven could take a shvua and what? Collect half the amount. In Marzutra's version of the discussion, it was Dayani Eretz Yisrael who said that you could take a shvua and collect the full amount, and Dayana Gola were the ones who said you could take a shvua and collect half of the amount. Therefore, I will say Marzutra is not Baruch Hashem. We've resolved it. Right? Marzutra is saying, I'm not contradicting you. We're saying the same things. There's just different attribution. And I will say, the way, obviously, this is a much more involved sugya than we're allotting to it. But just know, we happen to paskin, like as the Gemara records it in our version, Dayane Gola, which is also the version of Rava, that Rabbi Yossi, in this particular case again, where Reuven lent, gave Shimon the $100,000 for this Iska arrangement. 50,000 was a halva. 50,000 was a pikadon. Then Shimon Zichron Levracha passes away. Reuven comes to get back the money from the estate, from the Yarshim of Shimon. So Reuven has the ability to get back the 50,000 that is the halva. Because Rabbi Yossi, why? Why? Because again, Reuven has the shtar. Reuven has the shtar. And there is no taina that Shimon could have advanced during his lifetime that would have exempted him from having to pay back the alva if Reuven has the shtar in his hands. Therefore, by definition, there's no claim that the Yesomim can make to exempt them from paying back the 50,000 that is the loan. Therefore, they have to pay back the 50,000 that is the loan. But, Rabbi say we paskin that Reuven cannot collect the 50,000 of the pikadon. Why can he not collect the 50,000 of the pikadon? Because had Shimon been alive, he did have a taina that he could have made. Two tainas. What are the two tainas he could have made? Number one, Hechzakti gave it to you. Number two, Ones. So because of that, Rabosai, because of that, the Yarshim have the ability to, so to speak, make those same tainas. Now, obviously, they're not making those tainas. But because those tainas exist, therefore, by definition, again, Shimon cannot extract, Reuven cannot extract the 50,000 that is the pikadon. Ultimately, again, from the Yarshim, and therefore again, Rabbi Yossi, in this case, we paskin that Reuven would be able to get back the 50,000 that is the halva, but he would not be able to reach from the Yesomim the 50,000 that is the pikadon. If anyone needs to do mechiras chametz, there are have forms right over here.
Belonging to Reuven's money, taken down.